Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Suzlon Energy Limited Q3 FY25 earnings conference call. During this call, the company management may make certain statements that reflect their outlook for the future, which could be constructed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with certain uncertainties and risks, as detailed in the annual report. Actual results may differ, so these statements should be reviewed in conjunction with the risk of the company faces. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and if you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. We will begin with opening remarks followed by a Q&A session. To be fair to others, we kindly request each participant to ask no more than two or three questions. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. Over to you, J.P. Chalasani, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining our earnings conference call for quarter three FY25. We are happy to share that our good performance has continued for quarter three FY25, driven by strong growth momentum and the success of key strategic initiatives. I will now highlight the key points, and following that, we will open the floor for any questions you may have. As promised in our last investor call, we are pleased that for the current quarter also, our order book is at an all-time high of over 5.5 gigawatts, maintaining our leadership across the customer segments. For the very first time in history, we will also enter the new financial year with an order in hand for the entire year. Our focus continues to be on securing high-quality orders for a period beyond FY26 that offer greater value and better margins. On the manufacturing front, we are extremely happy to announce a significant ramp-up in capacity to over 4.5 gigawatts with revamped Pondicherry and Nacelle facilities. Additionally, we have added new blade lines in Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, which will increase our production to meet demand for the future. The order book for S144 now exceeds 5 gigawatts, a testament to superior technology and strong customer confidence in Suzlon. This achievement reflects our 29 years of proven track record and a 31% market share in the installed base in India. We take pride in stating that the S144 is truly made in India, made for India product, with over 85% of its components sourced domestically. On the execution front, Suzlon has achieved a record quarterly delivery of 447 megawatts, marking an outstanding 163% year-on-year growth, up from 170 megawatts same quarter last year. With 977 megawatts delivered in the 9 months of FY25, we have already surpassed the entire FY24 total of 710 megawatts, setting a new benchmark for our performance. The industry commissioned approximately 2,277 megawatts in the first 9 months of FY25, falling short of expectations, primarily due to transmission delays and land-related challenges. However, we see a sizable number of turbines are currently in the pre-commissioning stage to get commissioned in a phased manner. Talking about Suzlon, we have commissioned 241 megawatts in the first 9 months, and with an additional 218 megawatts which are pre-commissioned, bringing the total to 450 megawatts. With around 80% of our order book being non-EPC orders, where land availability is in customer scope. However, even for non-EPC orders, we have prioritized orders with partial land availability upfront, notably NTPC, Jindal Renewables, and the latest Torrent Power orders come with substantial land availability at the start, which will provide better commissioning visibility for FY26. Our OMS business continues to do well with 15 gigawatt capacity in India, with machine availability ensured beyond 96%. Renom continues to strive for customer fleet acquisition, with AEM assets under management crossing 3 gigawatts. We believe India's renewable energy journey is just beginning, with the wind sector poised for multi-decade growth, supported by a wind installation target of 400 gigawatts for Viksit Bharat 2047. With our ramp-up strategy on track and operational preparedness at optimal levels, we are well positioned to sustain momentum, creating long-term value for our stakeholders, and play a pivotal role in advancing India's renewable energy. It gives me great pleasure to mention that our efforts on the ESG front is being deeply appreciated and recognized by the external world. Suzlon is now a member of United Nations Global Compact and has aligned to the decarbonization goal of net zero by 2050. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, JPC sir, and good evening to all of you, ladies and gentlemen. As always, I will be using slide numbers 18 to 26 of our investor presentation as a reference point of my discussion during this discussion. The investor presentation has now been uploaded on our website. With an unprecedented order book of 5.5 gigawatts, we are thrilled to have clear and promising revenue visibility. The timeline for executing this order book is approximately 24 months, setting us up for an exciting and transformative period over the next two fiscal years. In Q3 FY25, Suzlon continues its exponential growth trajectory, delivering 447 megawatt with all financial parameters showing a strong surge YOY and Q1Q. In the 9 months of FY25, we have already surpassed all our targets or deliverables that we did for the full year in FY24. On a consolidated basis, Suzlon delivered record performance in Q3 with a revenue of 2,969 crores, which is 91% higher as YOY for the same period. For the WTG segment, our contribution margin has improved to 22.7% for the 9 month period FY25 from 19.4% during the same corresponding period for the prior financial year. Our EBITDA for the quarter three is at about 500 crores, which is 102% increase YOY and a 70% jump Q1Q with an improvement in EBITDA margin to 16.8% from 15.9% last year, despite organizational buildup, technological advancements, and a substantial ramp up in capacity. This we've been able to achieve largely because of the scale and the leverage that we now have with our suppliers due to the scale that of our order book. Quarterly PAT of 388 crores is 91% higher on a year-on-year basis and 93% higher on a quarter-to-quarter basis, which gives us confidence that Suzlon has shifted into high gear on the operational growth following a successful financial turnaround on the balance sheet front nearly a year ago. We are also pleased to report that our balance sheet has further fortified as of December 2024 with a net worth of 4,914 crores and a net cash position of 1,107 crores. Our pioneering business model of offering end-to-end wind energy value chain, fully integrated supply chain, track record of project execution and best-in-class service cannot be easily replicated, which provides us a very, very strong competitive edge. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and open the floor to any queries that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead. Sumit Kishore, please go ahead with the question. Your line is unmuted. As there is no response, we'll move to the next question, which is from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, sir. And
good evening.
On a very, very good quarter and superb last 24 months, sir. My question is, sir, on the order inflow inquiry, of course, it has increased 18 months.
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir, but you are not audible.
Am I audible now?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, how has been the order inflow inquiry as of now? Are we seeing inquiries? Are we seeing inquiry as strong as it has been there in the last 18 months?
Yeah, I think it is not last 18 months. What I would say is actually it is increasing from quarter to quarter, the other inquiries, as we keep seeing it. So therefore, we see a good traction in terms of other inquiries. And there are obviously, you know that there are three types of other things. One is the CNS segment, which is our strongest point, where we have about 58% mark in our order book share. Then PSS is picking up now. You know that we have won already NTPC one order, second the bid is put in already. We're expecting results to come out in the next 30 to 45 days. Another PSS. And third is a bid. So the bid project. So we actually, and also we are now seeing a traction that where people are talking about, fine, it is not needed to be done. Can we do a project development? And then we want to do a project, let's say, in FY27, starting at end of FY26. So we're getting interesting proposals, and so we're also getting into discussions where people are saying, can we have a little longer term pipeline type of a discussions rather than just having one-off projects. So I think from that angle, the traction what we're seeing on the order book is very, very encouraging.
My second question on the C&I side, sir, given the fact that the transmission charges are supposed to go up by June 25, And there was the expectation that C&I will pick up in the Q4 FY25 and Q1 FY26. Are you seeing that that momentum?
Yeah, it continues. See, let's understand it. First of all, the two factors which play a role. One is the tariff arbitrage compared to what they have today versus what happens with the renewables. Secondly, the transmission front, it is not completely going away in June 25. We are moving from 100% waiver to 75%. Okay, for one more year, you have 75%. Then it goes to 50%, then it goes to 75%. So therefore, while it is less than what it would have been up to June 25, but there's still the transmission charges waiver to the extent of 75% for the next 1 year. So therefore, the people would have preferred to complete as much as possible before June 25, but then the wherever projects are, there still the traction is happening on that.
Understood. So my last question is on the financial side. I think on the O&M services, your revenues are increasing QOQ, right? QOQ and YOY, but your EBIT is almost similar at 2 billion. So can you please explain that and how should we build up the for the future?
So Mohit, it is essentially, you know, there is if you look at any period, there are a certain one-off items that hit the P&L, whether it is relating to insurance services or the insurance claims or the VAP and VAS services that causes this fluctuation. You know, clearly going forward, as we've always maintained, that the O&M margins at an EBITDA level will be about 40%, and we continue to maintain that guidance going forward. There may be aberrations quarter to quarter due to, as I said, insurance claim income and the VAP pass sales.
Understood, sir. Thank you, best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mohit.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. My compliments on a fairly strong set of numbers in Q3. My first question is, what are the emerging trends of wind solar sizing in FDRE projects with evolving battery economics?
It's actually very difficult to predict, as I think partly you yourself answered. The changing pricing scenario of storage would keep changing the combination of wind, solar, how much do you want to have it. Having said that, the what type of an FDRE we are talking is important, because are we talking about the load following FDRE, Because MDRE definition is completely different. If you see, go ahead and see the bits itself, there are 7 or 8 types of MDRE. And you
let
talk
us
about
say for load following FDRE.
Load following FDRE. See, earlier it used to be like the it used to be about 200% of the grid capacity is supposed to be wind. Now people are still talking about 140-150%. So therefore, the it also depends upon the load profile, specific load profile. Okay, if you're talking about, let's say, a load profile of a Delhi DISCOM, some location which just came up, because the peak is much higher, so then you will have a more of wind capacity there. And if you're talking about semi-urban type of an FDRE, then you will have a different combination. It's difficult to explain, but it is changing with respect to the storage spacing, but still the installed capacity required of wind will be more than 100% in any FDRE load following scenario. Whether it would be 150 or it should be 160 or 170, we really don't know, depending upon the load profile of that particular retail distribution segment.
Got it. The second question is, could you quantify the non-recurring items which may be part of third quarter as part of employee expenses? Also, whether the depreciation and interest costs that we see in Q3, are they the recurring numbers that we should expect with the higher WTG capacity, especially on depreciation?
So depreciation, Sumit, will be a recurring item because, with the increased capex, JP sir mentioned, with Pondicherry for the additional nasal facility getting mobilized and our additional molds for the S144 getting commissioned, the increased capex is, of course, hitting the P&L from a depreciation perspective. So you should certainly assume that the depreciation of, about 60 to 65 crores a quarter would continue as a normal standard.
Sorry?
You
talked about one-off expenses in employee.
Yes. So one-off expenses in employee, of course, would largely pertain to ESOP charge. Now, the ESOP charges for Q4 would be the similar as you've seen for Q3. As we step into the next financial year, difficult to say, but as of now, it looks like that the ESOP charge on account of employee expenses as a one-off would reduce for the full year in FY26 as compared to FY25.
What has been the number for Q3 on ESOP expenses?
ESOP expenses Q3 would be about 32 crores and for the 9 month, that expense, of course, you can just simply motamodi multiplied by 3, about 83 crores is the 9 month expense on ESOP. Our estimate is 116 crores would be the charge for ESOP for the full year FY25. And that 116 crores would certainly be lower. I can't say by what amount for FY26, but it would certainly be lower.
Okay. And just one last question, if you could comment on, what strategic steps are you taking for, diversifying from your main growth engine of WPG in India right now?
See, right now, as you see, there is a huge amount of traction within India. What we are now trying to look at is that how do we actually diversify our business within the WPG? As a growth is like as what we have been talking earlier, we are increasing our activity of advanced development. Okay, so we're getting into those contracts as we speak today. We do have a contract which we don't announce as part of WTG contracts for about 1100 megawatt for advanced development of projects, and then furthermore we are entering into. So therefore, what we are trying to do is diversify. I don't know whether you call it as diversification, you call it as a different action. Is that what do we need to do that this growth engine would further grow? So, because one of the reasons we are seeing is that the commissioning not happening at the required level, that has the pushback on how much can you supply. So we are trying to see that pushback can it be removed or not. That's one area which we are significantly concentrating. We started this year. That will grow big way the next year as well, so that we will not have an issue of a pushback coming on our supply. That's one area we're doing it. Second area, obviously, we're concentrating is in terms of multi-brand acquisition, in case of Renault. So these two are going to be the major things. But then we are looking at, any probability of exports in case you hit here. But that we're in the process of studying. We're not going to say that there is going to be the action right now planned for the next year. But then we are looking at it. So, saying that, okay, fine, if in India this is what is maximum it can take, then because we have a capacity, is it possible to do it to, let's say, Europe? We don't know what's going to happen. Yes, I know you've raised questions with that, but I have no answer for that. The Europe and other places, because there are a lot of European manufacturers are significantly exporting from here to Europe. India is the base. Our manufacturing costs are much lower than them. So obviously, if they can do it, we can also do it. But that is more of an incremental capacity over and above what we can sell in India, is what we are looking at. Otherwise, much we want to add, we don't have any other significant diversions at this stage.
Yeah, no, I agree. Further add to my earlier answer, Sumit, and also to Mohit's question in the first question, from the depreciation perspective, this quarter is the first quarter where we are fully consolidated Renom as well, because in Q2, we consolidated that only for about 25 days. In Q3 is the first quarter where the entire consolidation has happened. And about 8 crores delta in depreciation that you see is on account of Renom. And also to earlier Sumit's question, when you see the OMS segmental EBIT, because Renom as a margin business is, lesser than the Suzlon O&M business. So as Renom keeps growing, although it's very small still, so it doesn't make too much of a difference. But as we see the segmental revenue along with Renom, you might see a percentage shrink, but very minimal.
Those are my questions. Thank you and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Puneet Gulati from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity and congrats on a great order book. So how should one think about this 5 gigawatt order book? Over what period would you expect to deploy this?
These are some part of it, obviously, for current year executing in quarter four of this year. And yep. The large portion is for FY26 and some of them is FY27. Let's be clear that there are these days that you have an order book. When you take the order book, you have a contract schedule saying that this is what is the delivery. But we all know that there are changes happening with respect to the project schedules because maybe the substation got shifted or something else is happening. So there is a constant discussion between us and the clients to the extent of, keep modifying the schedule. But the simple answer to your question is that most of this order book is for FI26 and FI27.
Possible to give some sense of
residual after quarter four.
Yeah, possible to get a breakup between quarter four and then maybe FY26?
Yeah, I can give a contractual breakup. That's not going to help because it doesn't give you any number of saying that what it is really going to be, because the contractual number is different. In reality, what's going to happen is different. So as we keep approaching quarter to quarter, we will know what next quarter we're going to deliver.
In
my opening comments, first time in the history of Suzlon, we are starting the next financial year with the full order book in position.
Right. No, that's very interesting. And in that context, how are you pricing your product where there is uncertainty of, timing of installation FY 26, 27? Is there a flexibility in prices that you're keeping or is it a fixed price contract?
Two things we do. One is that a steel generally we treat as a pass-through because that's a major component for us.
Okay.
And second, what we say is that our price is valid for X amount of months for the project to get executed. If the supplies for reasons not attributable to Suzlon, if they get delayed contractually, then obviously we need to sit back and we can't really do often. We need to sit back and discuss the pricing. These are the two safeguards what we have.
So third one, that we've also done for our large A-class components with our suppliers, we've entered into long-term framework agreements. So we know that at least the key critical components Also, we do have a, in a way, price freeze, and beyond a certain volume, we in fact have a volume discount.
So there is a volume discount once you reach a certain number, and before that it's a fixed, like, and in that, have they given any advance? Is there a risk that these contracts might get cancelled if the price discussions don't fructify, or are very firm in nature and there is huge advance?
No, we've not given any advance to our suppliers because of the framework agreements. These are mere framework agreements, but you know, we've kept a fairly large margin of safety in terms of what we can deliver over the next 12 to 24 months vis-a-vis our order.
This is now supply chain side.
Yeah. Received advance from the from your customers.
Yeah. We don't announce any contract unless there is an the advance. The contract is backed with advance. We don't announce.
Right. And last one. And are these all for S144, or is there a plan for an upgrade built into these orders as well?
No. All these are for 144 at this stage. So, and of course, there's a small quantum of 8% out of our outstanding order book. 92% is 144, and 8% is for S120. And there is no other model other than these two we are offering in the market today.
Understood. And what's in the pipeline? Any thoughts you can throw on?
Yeah, pipeline always, you always work because the product development cycle is long. So yeah, obviously we're working on the next version of the turbine. But depending upon what is, when is the market ready, what happens to 144, we will launch the turbine.
Understood.
That will be larger than 144, obviously.
Got it. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikram Dathwani from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers.
Thank you.
Two questions from my side. So first is, we've seen order inflow already at 3.5 to 4 gigawatt in this year. The order book is at roughly 5.5 to 6 gigawatt. So at any point, do you think we will get choosy with our order inflow, or can we maintain this order inflow run rate? Because you already have visibility for the next 2 to 2.5 years. So do you foresee this kind of inflow going forward, or will we get a little choosy in orders in the next couple of years?
No, the moment I say choosy, it looks like we become arrogant. So obviously we're not that way. Customers have a choice, and we have a choice. When we discuss about these projects, is that what we look at, seriousness of the project is looking at their financial closure, if it is a bid PPA is there or not, because all projects what we acquired from the bid, the 21-22%, all of them have a PPA. And then if it is a non-EPC, it's an SIA equipment supply, there's a position of land and the substation is what we look at it. So generally, if you look at it, most players who are in the market today, the large IPPs what we enter into, all of them are good people. Okay, and as long as we have our own pricing of at which we want to offer, if that matches, and then we have adequate safeguards in terms of if there are delays, then we just go ahead. I don't think I will not use the word that we are choosy at this stage. Obviously, there is a clash of delivery coming in, and being asked for when we can't do it, then it is not choosy, but we will tell them we can't do this. This is what is my delivery schedule. We can adjust to the delivery schedule, is fine. Otherwise, they have an option to go somewhere else. Those things can happen.
Yes, correct. So I was majorly talking about from the capacity standpoint. Like you
That is exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. So therefore, if the delivery schedule is already, we are overloaded during that particular period, then we offer a different delivery schedule to them. We don't say no, we offer a different delivery schedule. And there are some discussions, sometimes we agree to a different delivery schedule, or sometimes it doesn't meet. So they say that, sorry, this time it doesn't meet, then I'll go somewhere else.
Thank you.
But that is again not the word of choosy, but not able to meet the requirement of the client.
Yes, I meant it from a capacity point of view. Got it, sir.
Yeah, you're right.
My second question.
You happened that way. You did happen that way.
Okay, sir. My second question is on margin sustainability. So we've had quarters where you've not booked EPC revenues, EPC expenses because installations have been weak. So on a yearly basis, do you have any sustainable margin guidance or any target mix between product delivery and EPC delivery?
So on margin, if we look at the contribution margin, you know, for the WTG segment, in the 9 month of this year, we've done about 22.7% for the division as a, for the segment as a whole. Now clearly, you know, the commissioning, you know, for reasons we've discussed, has been, you know, a little lower. But having said that, as and when, the EPC work and the commissioning completes, that margin may slightly come down. So, you know, whilst earlier we've always maintained a margin of late teens, I think, you know, safe to say that, you know, close to 20% or maybe little over 20% on a consolidated steady state basis would be the contribution margin. So that is, you know, pretty much, I would say, upping the guidance from a contribution margin perspective by a few percentage points.
Got it. Thank you. And any reasonable percentage breakup between product versus EPC that you are targeting?
No, we don't. We've not yet started giving segmental split of product versus EPC. We just, as you know, reporting WTG as a segment. We are not doing the split as of.
Okay, got it. That's it from my side. Thank you and best of luck going forward.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Amit Bhire from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations, sir, on a great set of numbers. So my first question is with regards to the realization, it comes to around 52 million per megawatt for this quarter. Now, in this, I understand that EPC portion was not there, but then is there any pricing pressure that you're experiencing with a few other, you know, OEMs getting very active in the market?
No, there is no pricing pressure whatsoever. In fact, when JP sir mentioned earlier, we don't want to be arrogant in saying no to a certain orders. So clearly the kind of traction that you see with our order book, you know, pretty much there for the next 2 years, there is no reason for us to come under pricing pressure. Neither is we are seeing that from the competition perspective. So this is merely due to, you know, slower execution on the EPC front that you're seeing the 52 million, which, you know, as always we mentioned, will be close to about 6 crores. If you take steady state basis, it's about, you know, 58 million to be precise. I think it's a notch lower largely because of the slower EPC execution.
Right. Right. So 58 million is a good number to work around with. Right. And on the contribution margin that you said in the previous question, 20% or a little over it, is that a sustainable guidance or is it only for F25?
So as I mentioned, you know, that as we move forward, you know, around, I would say 20% would be one large component, of course, is steel. So depending on where the utility prices move, while that's a large pass-through item, but consistently our endeavor would be to deliver a margin of close to 20%, which we always maintain late teens. So about 20% is what we can consistently do.
Okay.
Himanshu has become confident from late teens to 20%.
Yeah.
That's the only change in guidance.
Yes.
Got that. And on the previous question, you mentioned that there's around 1100 megawatts of advanced development projects that you are offering. So in this, how would...
Not offering, but executing.
Yeah, so you are executing. So how would the realization differ versus the 58 million for a average?
No, that is, yeah, let me, I think I explained in the previous quarter's calls also. If the development, what happens is that if someone wants to do an EPC project with us, because the land is an issue, so what they do is that they only give an NTP for the land. Okay. And first of all, we are not waiting even for the NTP. We have started developing the projects where we start acquiring the land up to a certain extent. Then we keep offering in the market saying this project is there if you want for development. Then they come in and give an NTP for land and they start paying for the land from then on. Okay. And at appropriate time, the NTP for EPC would be given. And we don't announce those EPCs because they are not being given. So once the EPC NTP is given, advance is given for that portion. Land they already give advance. So we announce to the market. That's how it works.
So this 1100
means these are certain to be get converted into EPC contracts, but at what stage when it gets converted, we are on to the market.
Right. So right now, is this 1100 a part of your 5.5?
No. That's what I said, that this will get, as and when gets converted into EPC contract with the advance, is when we will announce. Right now, it is not part of 5.5.
Any indicative timeline, 6 months or 1 year, that this can get converted?
It should be reasonable to expect that next 3 to 4 quarters, this get converted into EPC contract. There will be EPC.
Right. And one more question on your delivery timelines. As you mentioned that there is a contractual delivery timeline in each of the projects. So how is the timeline differing in CNI versus the PSUs? So PSUs, is it 18, 24 months or how is it in CNI, especially in PSU?
No. You're asking CNI versus PSU or?
Yeah. So is it like the CNI would have a lower contractual delivery timeline? Is that the right way to look at it?
No, C&I normally tend not to revise significantly the contractual schedule because it is meant for their own consumption normally. But there also we see that, you know, they get stuck with respect to the land and other things or the evacuation. But to lesser extent, PSU we get to see because we're just doing silent execution of NTPC right now. But on the grid related projects, obviously we see a big shift.
Right. Broadly, would it be like 12 to 18 months for CNI or lower?
Means like 12 to 18 months shift you're talking about, a contract schedule?
So, delivery timelines from ordering.
Yeah. It's reasonable tech. That's a reasonable number, 12 to 18 months.
Okay. Right.
Depending upon the size of the project.
Right. And for CAPEX, do you have any guidance revised? Because now that you are adding new blade lines, etc. So I recollect that you were guiding around 400 crores of CAPEX per year. Is there any revision to that?
So Amit, no revision, and you know, request that this be your last question. We can of course connect offline if you want, but
sure.
To quickly answer your question, that no revision and guidance to the same.
Sure, yeah. That was my last question. Thank you.
Thanks, Amit. We can connect offline.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adesh Mehta from Motilal Oswal AMC. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, so I can hear you. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So just wanted to understand this margin guidance, this margin aspiration of around 20%. This is on the EBITDA numbers or at the contribution level?
Adesh, it's on the contribution level for WTG.
Okay. Noted.
I wish it was EBITDA, but I don't. Definitely not. So it is on the contribution margin for WTG segment.
Thanks for clarifying. And other thing which I wanted to understand is that so far wind installations have broadly lagged our deliveries, right? If you see the country level data. For how long do you think this can continue, that, you know, even as installations are lagging, we will continue delivering our products to our clients?
See, obviously, if there is a continuous delay in the land or the evacuation, there would be, that's what I said sometime back in another question, that there could be potentially a pushback on supply side. Means like there could be delays and clients can say that please slow down the supplies. That's probability can happen. That's otherwise, even our numbers, what we're looking at today would have been still higher. Okay, so what we delivered in Q3. But that is what we need to overcome. That is where I said that we have now been working with, one is on the development side. Second thing, what is we're looking ahead is that if you look at next year, it is not going to change in a quarter or 2 quarters, but it will definitely change in FY26 significantly. These that land coming from development. Second also is that some of the clients what we are now contracted have a land in position. For example, we just did the Torrent Power contract of 482 megawatt, which is meant for the captive for the distribution business. They already have 50% of land along with the right of ways. So plus I said that we are developing ourselves like NTPC as you know, whatever we are now executing, they're already getting the land in advanced position. Torrent for Karnataka, which got delayed EPC project, we are doing EPC, so therefore we acquired the land almost for about 150 megawatt, they're already out of 300 megawatt. So these things will result into a better project execution, quicker project execution moving ahead. But are we, do we see a significant change in Q4? No. Are we seeing going to see some change in Q1 next year? No. I think gradually from starting from Q2 or next year onwards, you will see an improvement, pushback coming down. FY26 will be definitely better than FY25 because of these reasons. And FY27 onwards, I don't think, at least as the one, we will see any issue with respect to the land. Evacuation, we still, of course, it's beyond our control. But on the land, the delaying the projects will not happen. Significantly come down in FY26, we can guarantee. And FY27, it would practically be not there.
Right. And sir, do we see this being a hiccup over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months? Because the execution run rate is very strong from our side. You think, given the, you know, progress report you are seeing at your client level, you can continue delivering this number of equipments?
Yeah, see, what happens is that the we have multiple clients, okay? If it is only a one project, two projects are continuing to supply, then there is a saturation point you reach quickly. Because you have multiple projects and multiple clients, so the, while I do agree that there will be some pushback, which is what we talked about, contractors schedule getting revised, but then we don't see it to that extent impacting our supplies significantly in the next few quarters. And by then we would be ready with even the land. Not only we, sector as a whole realized this as an issue, land and ROW. So most people are actually investing in land much in advance. Like I said, that the three clients which we are working with right now for this 1100 megawatt, they're spending on land much in advance with us. So I think things would change. Today, I completely agree that that's not just the land, including the evacuation is an issue today. We are nowhere near our ambition of reaching about 8 gigawatts a year run rate. But I think the things would change, expected to change in FY26 and FY27.
All the best, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. If you have a follow-up question, you may rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Dheeraj Kripalani from Avendus Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is on the industry level. If you look at the wind capacity additions in India, so till FY25, only 2 gigawatt has been added. So my question is that I just want to know your view that what capacity additions in India you will see in the next, let's say, 3 years, and what are the challenges, of course, in the capacity additions?
Yeah, as I said, we talked about Suzlon, we're not talking about industry. But I also said sometime back that not just we and the other industry players are also working towards reducing the risk of land. Okay. So therefore, this year, we still see, though we're at 2,277, let's say 2.3 gigawatts in first 9 months, it could be anywhere between 3.5 to 4 gigawatts is what we see. There's a large capacity. Like we also have, as I said, as we speak, it's we have more than 200 megawatts pre-commissioned. Means like it can just get onto the grid any day. So it's available. So other people also have it. So we're still hopeful that 3.5 to 4 gigawatts is what we should achieve this year. And then next year, we should, I think with all the efforts what people are putting, it should be around 6 gigawatts. And then we hopefully, FY27, at least FY27 onwards, we reach 7 to 8 gigawatts.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arun Kalisan from Geojit Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Hello, sir. So, first of all, congratulations on a good set of numbers. And, I'm still a novice in understanding this industry. So, I just wanted to know that, earlier in one of our on-calls, you had mentioned that the capacity addition would be somewhere around 5 to 7 gigawatts in 2026-27 for India in general. And then from then on, it would be around in the range of 10 gigawatts, right? I just wanted to know at what amount of capacity addition do we see the tariffs go to a range where like, you know, it turns less profitable for the developers? Because is there a concern of oversupply when it comes to this? So that is my question. Because we are seeing solar module prices correcting, and correspondingly the tariffs have also come down by a huge margin. And if that is a risk, then how would we look at negating that?
See, the first point is I agree that in our country, the tariff goes up, but the demand will drop. Okay. Demand is a function of the tariff. The demand elasticity gets limited if the tariff goes up. Having said that, if you look at the exchange and look at the demand and the price when wind generates is constantly high. Okay. Only thing what you're seeing is the tariffs during the solar time are coming down because the supply is higher and the demand is less. So I think there is enough appetite in the market to meet the current load profile for the wind capacity. And the wind tariffs are not, that way not going up. I don't think any tariffs are going up because tariffs are only falling even for FDRE because the solar prices are falling. Only case of solar, the tariffs have gone up because of the restrictions of this, and that has significantly gone up. If I remember right, the solar standalone now is almost crossed 3 rupees because of the domestic content criteria. So that can increase the tariffs, but the wind tariffs are not increasing. Wind tariffs remain the same. So the demand does exist for round-the-clock power because as we're growing, the demand is going to keep increasing. To some extent, there will be impact of solar tariffs going up because of domestic content, but I think to that extent, the storage prices what are coming down should be able to compensate.
So this about 10 gigawatts of addition post 2028 that we are factoring in is sustainable, right?
Sustainable is different. We always said that in case for us to meet the 100 gigawatt NB30, this is a runway segment, and we expected that, in fact, even compared to our expectations for this year, it is less. Okay, let's catch up the fact that we thought that we'll touch about 4.5 to 5 gigawatt, which we now revised to 3.5 to 4 gigawatts. Next year, as I said, sometime back 6, then 8. Yes, 10 is still feasible in FY28 with the advanced actions what everybody is taking.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jinesh Shah from SK Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, my question would be like, as you mentioned that we have ramped up the capacity from 3.1 gigawatt to 4.5. So I would just, because of which our depreciation also increased. So I would just like to understand that are all the assets operational and live, or are we expecting much more capex which will increase the depreciation and going forward?
So as I said earlier, we are looking at close to about 350 to 400 crores of annual capex for the next 2 to 3 years, which will all go towards a capacity augmentation. Of course, as a result, even the older asset base will get depreciated completely. To answer your earlier question, whether all the capex that we've incurred till date is operational, most of it is, and some of it is, getting operational as we speak. So for the next few quarters, including, of course, the Renom acquisition charge, about 65 crores of depreciation on a quarterly basis is a steady state that one should assume.
Okay, thanks a lot. And so my second question would be with respect to the interest income of 70 CR, like I was just validating with respect to, since in our books as of September, we had borrowings of approximately 232 CR gross debt. So I would just like to understand that how do we validate like the interest of 70 CR, if you can just read it about that.
Yeah, so of course, the interest cost is largely due to the LC and BG commissions that we have to pay to our lenders. And there is the 232 crore debt that you're referring to is working capital debt that sits in our two subsidiaries, which is SE Forge and Renom. So they have their cash credit facilities as working capital, which attract a normal interest rate. And the other is, of course, LCBG charges at the standalone level, which we pay for giving guarantees to our customers and LCs to our suppliers. That, of course, naturally gets netted off with the interest income that we are able to generate with the cash balance that we have in the company.
Okay, okay, understood, understood. That's it from my side. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Satpal Singh Khanuja from Ishan Ventures. Please go ahead.
Sir, good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
It is always a pleasure to talk to you, JPC sir. You are one of the corporate leaders who deliver their promises quarter on quarter.
Thank you.
Sir, can you help me understand the impact of the Trump era on renewable energy sector in India? Do we see a reduction of prices of the product if Chinese and European players start dumping in Indian markets?
See, the Chinese are already there.
Okay? Yeah.
And Chinese are not there anyway significantly in the US at this stage. So US market is mainly the GE and the stuff. So I don't think that would make a difference. Europeans significantly present today, they manufacture huge amount of quantities in India, but they're exporting because they're unable to compete in India. Mm-hmm. So therefore, either way, it should not make a difference. I only look at it is that in case the opportunities for, first of all, I have no clue about what is going to be the impact because every day you're reading a clarification. So suddenly IRA is impacted, say next day I see a statement, it is IRA is impacted only to the extent of EVs. It's an evolving situation, okay?
Uh-huh.
And there is a clear view that onshore wind turbines won't get impacted, it's only the offshore is going to get impacted. So therefore, the whether you speak or I speak, it is more of a gossiping between two of us and both of opinion. Therefore, I think we should wait for few more weeks before we see any impact on India. But if at all there is going to be an impact, in my opinion, it will be a positive impact but not a negative impact. Investment opportunity comes down in US, there will be more investment opportunities coming down here, coming in India. So I can only see the positive side of it. At this stage, I'm not seeing anything significantly negative for us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. My second question would be, now since we have our 18 to 24 months of normal period of conversion of any contract, plus there are usually delays from the side of the customer, now that we have an executable capacity of, say, 4,000 megawatt, as you mentioned in some other discussions previously, would a number of around 10,000 megawatt in the order book be the right number where we can think of coming at full capacity?
Come again, 10,000 megawatt per well.
Sir, now we say, when we say that we have an installed capacity of 4.5 megawatt and we are targeting 90% of that, given the 18 to 24 month conversion period and the delays that normally happen, to come at full capacity, an order book of about 10,000 megawatt would be the right number?
No, no, no. See, let me clarify. Today, we have an outstanding order book of 5.5 gigawatts.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak, and obviously at any point of time there will be a number of orders which we are negotiating, which will keep getting converted in future. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this 5.5 gigawatts is an order which are confirmed orders backed by the full advance. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What I mentioned is that somebody asked me the question is that how much of it will be for next year. I said contractually it could be anything, but let us wait and see that what happens in terms of reality of the project. So I have not given any guidance with respect to out of this 5.5 gigawatt, how much will be done next year. But I only said this 5.5 gigawatt will definitely get executed in FY26 and FY27 together.
Mm-hmm.
That was my answer.
No, what I'm saying is now that we have a capacity of 4,000 or 4 gigawatt, what we are targeting is an order book of something like 10 gigawatts?
Oh, you're saying that because we have a manufacturing capacity of 4.5 gigawatt.
Yeah.
So I might have a manufacturing capacity, but there should be offtake.
Mm-hmm.
Projects are ready to offtake. So obviously, yes, your point is right that if I load our manufacturing capacity to the 90%, so then obviously about 4 gigawatts is what we should supply every year. But that capacity comes only when your manufacturing plant is loaded on a consistent basis every month, but that doesn't happen. Your offtakes are different. So your project offtake is what decides how much capacity utilization happens.
Right, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepesh Kashyap from Invesco. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my questions. But just a clarification on the interest cost of 70 CR. I think last quarter you highlighted that there's a 10 to 11 crore of one-off expenses due to a new contract that you have got, right? So the normal run rate was 44, 45 crore of interest cost. So is this 70 crore now a new normal that you think, or if there's any one-off sitting here?
No, no. 70 crores is not a new normal, Deepesh. There is, close to about, of course, in this, 15 crores gets added in a quarter because of the One Earth, lease cost that currently that is there. Close to about 15 crores a quarter. That will get on a continuous basis, quarter on quarter. In addition to that, there is the Renom working capital cost that is getting added. As I said, Renom has about 120 crores of working capital facilities with it, which they utilize on a cash credit basis. So, of course, whilst we look at optimizing the cost, but we will also look at increased cash balances going forward. So the net interest costs would probably be in the normal region of around 40 crores a quarter, give or take. But that we will manage through, of course, whether increased interest costs or increased interest income, both net basis, we should assume about a 40 crores.
Understood. Secondly, when do you expect the normal taxation to start hitting your P&L?
So I think that, of course, it's very difficult for me to give you any guidance on that. But safe to say that I don't see that hitting us in FY26 at least. Can't say about FY27 at this stage.
Understood. And lastly, any plans on utilization of cash? Any inorganic opportunities you're looking at, or any dividend payments you're thinking about? Because now you are a 400 crore plus net worth, right? That's how things happen.
So inorganic, of course, we are, keep looking out. We'll be very selective. We won't go, very aggressive any inorganic opportunities. Any return or payback to the shareholders, we'll, of course, at the time of annual results, will be deliberated and discussed at the board before recommending to the shareholders. We'll, of course, need to see the reserves. So as you know, there is a scheme which is impending that requires for reclassification of reserves. So once that is done is when we can have the dividend paying capabilities. I hope and assume that should be completed. That scheme should go through by June, July. Once that is ready and the business exigency is permitting any dividend payout and the board approving, we would then only be able to recommend the same to shareholders.
Great, sir. Great. Thank you and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Rohan Vora from Envision Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on the numbers.
Thank you.
Just wanted to check on the Siemens. Are you still looking at it, or what is the update?
Sorry to interrupt you, but can you speak a bit louder, Mr. Rohan Vora?
Yeah, is it better?
Yes, please.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So, sir, I just wanted to check around Siemens Gamesa. So what is the update around that? And, are we looking at that particular transaction?
Obviously, Siemens Gamesa, we will not have an update because that is that company to provide. We are not looking at it. We said earlier also.
Absolutely. So are we looking at it is what I'm trying to understand.
No.
We've always been on record. We never changed our stance. So we are not looking at that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Rohan?
Yeah, let us take the next question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Purswami from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir, and congratulations for good set of numbers. Sir, just wanted to check it out. Eventually, when we would be looking out 4 gigawatt of execution on the year-on basis, from the order inflow point of view, at some point of time, we are also considering export market to be tapped going ahead? If you can throw some light on that.
See, our manufacturing capacity is 4.5 GW, so therefore, we are in a position to supply 4 GW a year if there is a demand to the extent in India. So when that, I really won't be able to answer that because it depends upon various external factors. Okay. But we do have a capacity to supply 4 GW a year as we speak today. As far as international is concerned, sometime back, to a different question, I mentioned that right now there's so much happening in India. However, we are evaluating that what are the opportunities available outside India, if at all there are. Today is only evaluation phase. So in case, because we have a capacity that India offtake gets to a certain level, can we actually do an incremental capacity and then sell outside? But right now, there is no solid proposal to that. It's only an evaluation process. And by when, we don't know really. All depends upon market evaluation.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Falguni Dutta from Mansarovar Financials. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. So I just have one question. Is it possible to give volume guidance for FY 2026?
We have not been providing that volume guidance, not just for the FY 2026. No, we are not even providing for the next quarter. So I think we will maintain that. So the.
Okay.
Because it depends upon various factors, because we don't want to give a guidance and then, you know, start giving the reasons why it has been achieved or overachieved or underachieved, because market is so dynamic outside in terms of execution. So we maintain the guidance.
Yeah, you mean to say because of the execution issue, right? Understand.
Yeah.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
But you're seeing the growth, so therefore, obviously, you can, you know, you can guess.
Okay.
Growth continue quarter to quarter.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to the time constraints, this will be the last question, which is from the line of Rusmik Oza from 9 Rays EquiResearch. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So I want to check up in next fiscal year, you know, if industry does around 6 GW, you know, can we maintain the market share of 40%, which we, I think last quarter we were above 40% market share. If you can just give some color on the kind of market share we would retain next year.
Can you please come again? So sorry.
I just wanted to understand what kind of market share would you be able to retain next year, that's FY 2026 in industry?
Market share of what?
The wind, WTG.
So, I mean, WTG, what? Order booking, supply, or commissioning?
Supply or commissioning of wind energy.
Yeah, right now, the publicly available number is only the commissioning. Okay? So there is no data, or nobody is monitoring the data in terms of order book or in terms of for the supplies. Right now, this year, obviously, the 40% is not there at all. We are much lower than that at this stage number, because we also can't, we can't measure, last time also I mentioned, measure the performance of based on the market share of COD for us, because, as you see in our composition, only 20-22% is what is EPC. Rest all are non-EPC, where we really don't have the full control. So therefore, our, now the main indicator is in terms of supplies. That's what will decide, you know, what is going to be our financial performance and the commissioning of the number.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. And my second question, sir, was on the foundry and forging business. Our utilization level right now is around 19%. Just wanted to get a feel how much can this utilization go up next fiscal year, and the margins, which are, say, at around 12.5, can they go back to 15-16%?
We're working towards that. We're working towards the progressing our order book in terms of non-wind as well as exports. And also we are trying to see that we increase our machining capacity so that we don't need to outsource machining, so that we increase the margin. You will see the improvements quarter to quarter from now onwards.
Okay. Okay. Okay, thanks for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Himanshu Mody for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone, for joining the call, and I know there is a question queue still pending. My apologies to to all those investors. We are unable to take all the questions at this stage. However, I request, please do write to us on our email ID, investorrelations@suzlon.com, or reach out to my colleagues, Siddharth and Krishna, with your questions, and we will be happy to answer those. But apologies, we won't be able to take any further questions at this stage. Thank you very much for being patient, hearing us out, and look forward to being in touch with you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Suzlon Energy Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.